It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go on this Moran Monday, the 28th day of September 2020, downhill to the end of September. And yes, delightfully fundraising free radio for this Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Thank you very kindly. Made it to the mailbox today, so thank you to Larry in Liberalville. Thank you for have a show on me from Irish Dave. Thank you very kindly to Brandon and Fennell, and thank you, Tom, in sunny San Rafael, which rhymes with Fennell, and don't try this at home. Hi, I'm Bob, amateur Uber driver, and in point of fact, that's why the program started a little bit late, because the amateur Uber driver was a little bit late getting back to the studio. Of course, a merry band has gathered in the Horn chat room, that merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza, which gets together every evening for the live program between 5 and 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and 2 and 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. If you'd like to be part of it, just run on over to Headon.live, click on chat room. If you've never picked out a screen name and a password before, if you've never been part of the merry band, well, jump right in and you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Dowhead and Kiazi and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry and Texas T and Warrior Witch, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has taken a powder on folding space today because, well, the man cave's 101 degrees, and who wants to be in that? And he is capably assisted by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia Sin. Every program at the Horn, because we are not a capitalist organization, because we are not trying to sell anything, because we are not trying to buy any Gulfstream jets or... Okay, Agnes would like to have a hot tub, but never mind. And the hot tub attendant, too. Go with it. But never mind. You are why the program continues, and so every program here begins with gratitude. Thanks very kindly going out to Charlene in Rogues Island, to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you to Suman. Thank you to Randy in PA. Thank you to Robert in Australia, to Peter. Thank you, Peter. Thank you to all of our subscribers who keep the program on the air, both at Patreon and PayPal, and thanks to our a la carte contributors, all of whom make it possible for this program to be entering in a matter of just, well, Thursday, we will enter into our 15th anniversary month. For this program as a standalone online operation. And thanks very kindly for the nitrile gloves that to help keep Agnes and me and Ferg safe. Thank you very kindly for that. So here we are at Moran Monday. And golly, we are not at all hurting for Morans. Oh no, we're not. So let's get this thing going the way it ought to, shall we? Yes.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You will not believe your ears when you wander away from the Carnival Midway, where only recently you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a vain and futile attempt to win a not-so-precious little baby iguana. No, 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 no. You will not believe your ears when you step behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas where we've got them all. Birchers, deathers, birthers, ninthers, tenthers, deathers, booger eaters, Trumpanzees, libertarians, mainline Republicans, maggots, we have the full panoply of right-wing moranity behind the aforementioned thin cybernetic veil. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. For those who make sure that we can travel from town to town and set up the Moran Monday tent, yes, as subscribers, it sets a subscriber back less than half a stick of chewing gum, less than half of a McDonald's biscuit, less than half, yes, of a hamburger to keep it all going as a $10 a month subscriber. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And remember, please, friends and neighbors, aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins, moms and dads, brothers and sisters, folks of all shapes and sizes, remember, please, to exercise caution when you enter the Moran Monday tent, because, well, the Morans are attracted by sparkly things, whether they be necklaces, bracelets, rings, earrings, nose torques. All manner of bright and sparkly things attract the attention of the Morans. Yes, they get kind of hungry, too, so keep a close eye on, you know, children, loved ones, pets, even that little iguana you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, oddly enough. Keep a close hand on everything, even European-style messenger bags, because, after all, the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And you will. You really and for truly will, because we got almost more than we can handle this evening. But let's start, shall we? Let's start in, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, shall we? Yes, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Home of the swell and the well-to-do, also home of Slip F-18 at Bahia Mar Marina, fictional home to Travis McGee and his barge-like boat, the Busted Flush. Mm-hmm. But also home of late to a household with some problems. Yes, yes. I guess I'm a bad progressive because, while various and sundry other folks were extending condolences and sympathies and things like that, I gotta admit I giggled a little bit when I saw the news. There was at least a low grade, low rent chuckle, because you see, a phone call was placed over the weekend to 911 there in Floridistan, in an upscale neighborhood of Fort Lauderdale. It seemed that one of the individuals in the home was threatening to do themselves harm and had at their disposal a
well, at least a firearm, probably a lot of firearm, being as this individual was originally a denizen of Texas, where you have to have at least 72 firearms in order to qualify as a sure enough, honest to goodness, no kidding, a good Texan, right? So this individual was threatening self-harm, threatening to shoot themselves. And the individual's spouse picked up the phone and dialed 911, and the Fort Lauderdale SWAT team came out. And, well, Brad Parscale, formerly the campaign manager for Donald J. Trump, the J stands for loyalty above all, but who was unseated after the Tulsa super spreader rally earlier this year because he got punked by a bunch of kids on TikTok, and that's why TikTok is in such hot water, into thinking there were going to be a million people in Tulsa who were just dying to see Donald Trump. I got to see my Donald. I got to see him. It's the only thing that's keeping me going through this Democrat hoax pandemic. Yeah, that Brad Parscale said that they were going to have a million people in Tulsa, and turned out they had less than 6,000, and there was an echo inside the arena that just, well, the nitwit Nero didn't care for that, and he doesn't like being embarrassed, right? And then, of course, the Lincoln Project had put out an ad talking about how Brad Parscale had gone out and bought himself a Ferrari. Vroom, vroom. Yes, bought himself a Ferrari out of the grift that is the ongoing grift that is the Donald Trump campaign. And you got to remember, Brad Parscale, back in 2015, 2016, was a great big giant nobody. Yeah, he was just this digital advertising dude running some skeevy websites. But he got tapped because he had the ability to manipulate Facebook data. And his stock rose considerably when Nitwit Nero actually won the Electoral College. Yeah. But this year, his fortunes began to fade again with the Tulsa super spreader event that eventually killed Herb Cain. 999. 14 is my number, by the way. I am 14 days without a cigarette. Mm-hmm. The nicotine stains are beginning to disappear from my fingers. There aren't very many of those sort of autonomic reach for it moments when I just have to have a, when I think I have to, and the cravings are going away. Heck, I was, I went hours and hours and hours over the weekend without even reaching for a nicotine patch. I'm pride goeth before a fall, so I'm not going to say I'm proud. But I am pleased that I've been able to make it this long. And I don't foresee picking them back up again. At least I hope I don't. I remain highly motivated. But anyway, Brad Parscale bought himself a Ferrari, screwed up in Tulsa. And then there's reason to think that perhaps there's more shit about to hit the fan that may have flipped him out a little bit, Brad, to the point that he was coming unglued this weekend, and he had to be bakered, not Carol, not Sister Carol, but he had to be bakered there in Florida, And so the Fort Lauderdale Police Department released some video and audio of the incident. We might want to check in with that and see what might be there to be gleaned in the way of information.
It's been a little while because he's acting crazy, and so I went outside to the backyard and let him just, like, show up.
Uh-huh.
And he was just, like, going irate. And he, like, came out of his office, cocked a gun, went back, and I was like, okay, this is, like, fucked up. So I went to the front yard.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I saw him, like, I was sitting in the front yard, I was trying to, like, give him space.
Wait, she used the coitus word. Whatever will the evangelicals think? Well, they're not perfect, just forgiven. Yes, of course.
Okay, chill out. I saw him, like, look out the window.
And
then I heard a loud boom.
Hello, Brad. How you doing, sir? Hey, I got him on the phone. Hey, Brad, how you doing? This is Officer Scad, the Fort Lauderdale Police Department.
Oh, my God.
You okay? You okay in there? Okay. All right. Can you do us a favor? Can you walk out with no weapons? Can you come outside with no weapons, please?
Okay, we're here May 25.
Please. Can you? Please. With no weapons. Please. Listen to the obsequy of the officer. Listen to how polite he is. Listen to how there's no conversation about putting a bag over his head and suffocating him to death naked in the middle of the street. Of course, this is just a nice little neighborhood, a nice, sedate little neighborhood, palm trees and everything in Fort Lauderdale. So Brad Parscale is a nice, wealthy, white guy with a Ferrari. So I guess that might explain the politeness of the local constabulary. It's the best I got, at least.
It's been a little while because he's acting crazy, and so I went outside.
Yeah, please. Please?
You okay? You okay in there? Okay. All right. Can you do us a favor? Can you walk out with no weapons?
A favor.
Can you come outside with no weapons, please?
It's a favor.
Okay, we're here May 25 if you're coming.
Sir, can you just come step out of the house?
Charlie 10, we're 25 in the
family. All right. Sir, just do us a favor. We're just trying to check on you. All right. I know. Okay, that's perfectly fine, but just do us a favor and just come outside. Charlie 14, I still have him landline. He's refusing to come out.
Like, went back inside, came back out of his office, like, popped his handgun, and went back inside.
You got a lot of guns in the house?
I think we have, like, four or five.
Four or five.
Handguns, like, rifles like that, or a lot of handguns?
He has a shotgun, he has a rifle, he has
a Glock.
Got a
so
Glock.
After he did that, I was like, okay, he just needs to, like, he's really getting out of control. So I went to the front yard, and I was just sitting in the front yard, just, like, trying to chill out for a second. And so then I saw him, like, open the blind.
Yeah, Mrs. Parscale is clearly just absolutely distraught. I mean, you can hear it in her voice, the sort of nasal, business-like tone that she's using. And she's wrapped up in a towel because, well... she called the police. I guess she was out there enjoying the South Florida sun in late September. And I mean, you're laying there, you're working on your tan. Whose husband doesn't come out and rack around into the chamber and babble something incoherent, something Ferrari fucking Trump, you know, who knows what he said, and then go back and barricade himself in the house.
In the front yard. And then he closed him, and then I heard what I thought was a gunshot.
No. Okay, come out here. That's fine.
I'm your friend.
All right, relax.
I'm your ally, I'm your friend, he says. Shirtless, shoeless. Maskless, nothing on but a pair of, you know, long trunks and a ball cap, and it's not even a, damn it, there will be a price to pay for this, it's not even a MAGA cap, y'all. But, yeah, I'm your friend, because, of course, you know, the God knows nitwit Nero has spent an incalculable amount of time making law enforcement understand that he's their friend, and that Joe Biden's going to let the BLM, Antifa, fascist, communist, pinko, Rosicrucian, Freemason, Illuminati, learned elders of Zion just, you know, eat their babies. Yeah, I'm your friend. I'm your friend.
What's going on?
She's fucking...
Just finish it.
Don't
do this. I'm not doing anything. Relax.
Having a little hard time getting the beer can onto the edge of the big Ford truck, but that's okay. And motor skills kind of go south a little bit when you've had a bit too much to drink. And far be it from me to criticize anybody for having too much to drink. It's the gunplay and the Republican hypocrisy that's the issue here.
What happened?
So, she started saying all this shit.
Hey, get on the ground, man. Get on the ground. Get on the ground. Get on the ground, man.
Oh!
I didn't do anything.
And so, okay, at least there's a little bit of commonality, I guess. A flying tackle from stage left takes him to the ground as he's yelling, "I didn't do nothing."
I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything.
Stay out. Put your hands back.
Put your hands back. Hey, we'll figure it all out. All right?
Don't worry about it.
I didn't do anything.
We're gonna get you off the ground.
I didn't do anything.
We're gonna get you off the ground in just a second, okay?
And the bracelets. Yeah, he didn't do anything. And she started saying all this shit. Right. Steve in New York, subject line, please. Where's the part about them having Burger King waiting for him? Or maybe sushi, perhaps? So let me guess. He comes out, they put a spit guard over his head and made him sit on a frozen pavement, right? No, frozen pavement? It's Fort fucking Lauderdale, Steve. But they did tackle him. So, I mean... On the other hand, from News Channel 4... A headline, dated, curiously enough, today, revealed, and remember, Brad Parscale was a boy genius, because he learned how to manipulate Facebook data, and thanks very kindly to David in South Carolina, Stan, for that video. He learned how to manipulate data so that Donald Trump could find a way forward in an election where everybody thought that he was a surefire loser. Headline revealed, Trump campaign strategy to deter millions of black Americans from voting in 2016 by the Channel 4 news investigation team. The investigation team includes Job Rabkin, Guy Bassnett, Ed Hauker, Janet Eastham, and Heidi Pett, a news production team comprised of Sola Renner, Michael French, Josh Ho, Matthew Kundal, Tim Bentham, Tony Fryer, Danny Isdale, and Anna Lisa Fugelsang. So when they're putting names to it, it's a British outfit, UK outfit. I'm treating this as legitimate. 3.5 million black Americans were profiled and categorized as deterrents by the Trump campaign. That means they were voters that they wanted to stay home on Election Day 2016. Channel 4 News has exclusively obtained a vast cache of data used by Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign, which would one would presume involve, say, Brad Parscale. that, well, the cache of data involves almost 200 million American voters. 3.5 million were categorized as deterrents, kind of the way that back in the 70s, old Fred Trump, you know, the Klansman, would have his organization categorize people with skin darker than a white paper bag as C for colored, so that the company would know not to rent to them in any of the skeevy apartments that Donald Trump maintained in the greater New York area, Donald and Fred. This eventually got them sued and busted, you know, for being racists, racist landlords. So deterrence. That meant that they would use Facebook magic to make sure to put information out there that would keep 3.5 million African-American voters the fuck home on election day so that they wouldn't go out and vote for, you know, her, the devil. And it is being described as a new form of voter suppression. And so the call is going out for Facebook to disclose ads and targeting information that heretofore Facebook has been sitting on, because Facebook, of course, Mark Zuckerberg, asshole, has known all along. Vast in scale, the cache of data contains details on almost 200 million Americans. Yes, among more than 5,000 files. 5 terabytes of data. One of the biggest leaks in history, News Channel 4 reports. In 16 key battleground states, millions of Americans were separated by an algorithm into one of 8 categories, also described as audiences, so they could then be targeted with tailored ads on Facebook and other platforms. And they were, and the Trump campaign was able to drill down with a degree of granularity that we really didn't know could be done. You know, street level. I mean, we're past zip codes. And we're down to individual streets and individual homes. And so, for instance, the article cites Georgia, where 32% of the electorate is black, yet 61% of the deterrence category in Georgia was black. So, oddly enough, it turns out that 2016 was the first time that African-American turnout had dropped in a presidential election in 20 years. The digital campaign, by the way, was called Project Alamo. It was based in San Antonio. Of course, Brad Parscale, also a Texan. And, of course, it was done in conjunction with Cambridge Analytica, which even now has 2 members of the same team on the 2020 Trump campaign. So maybe that's what drove Brad, who has been kind of in the wilderness ever since the Tulsa debacle, to drink some of his frustrations away and, well, you know, get out and handle the firearms and whatnot. And yes. Now, another term used for the ads that were run and meant to be seen by African Americans was dark posts. They disappeared once the campaign stopped paying for them, and they stopped paying for them once they knew that they had been seen. And they were negative ads that were meant to suppress the turnout for Hillary Clinton. They're not so stupid that they're going to, why don't we try to get the black people to vote for Donald Trump? Oh, come on. The son of a fucking Klansman, really? And among those ads, was the determined effort that was made to highlight Hillary's super predators comment. Back in October 2016, it was seen millions of times on Facebook. And the power of these ads is that they then inspire further action. People got hold of the super predators language and ran with it. I even talked about it. And I am here on this 28th day of September 2020 to apologize for ever having mentioned it. Because between the Russians and Cambridge Analytica and Brad Parscale and the Trump campaign, they were pushing this narrative into the public consciousness for all they were worth. And probably 99% of the people who were howling, barking mad, or driven that way by that language had no idea that they themselves were being weaponized. Now, at the same time that this was all going on, Brad Parscale, he gave a quote to PBS Frontline. I would say I'm nearly 100% sure we did not run any campaigns that targeted even African Americans. That was a giant lie. And so you got to figure that an outfit like this would reach out to Brad and say, hey, we're running a story on Monday. He'd get wind of it. He'd know the shit was about to hit the fan even harder. And off to the cooler he'd go. I don't mean the jail. I mean the ice chest or the refrigerator where all the beer was. Or maybe the several liter bottles of old Panther piss or whatever his poison of choice is. Meanwhile, Facebook trundled out one of its spokes creeps who said, since 2016, elections have changed and so has Facebook. What happened with Cambridge Analytica couldn't happen today. We have 35,000 people working to ensure the integrity of our platform, created a political ads library, and we have protected more than 200 elections worldwide. We also have rules prohibiting voter suppression and are running the largest voter information campaign in American history. That sounds a lot, just to my ear, like an admission. And the risk management lawyers there at Facebook must be going, what the fuck? Really? We said that? We basically admitted that we let all this happen in 2000? Oh, fuck. The Trump campaign, the Republican National Committee, and the White House did not provide any comment to Channel 4 News prior to broadcast. Yeah. It's been a very bad weekend for the maggots, all told. Because, of course, you know by now there's the story of Trump's taxes. The billionaire. Often paid no taxes at all. And the most he ever paid in taxes were $750. Not $7,500, not $750,000, not $7.5 million, not $75 million. I mean, a $75 million tax bill would not be that outrageous for a super-duper billionaire like Donald J. Trump. My name is Elmer J. Fudd, millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht. Right. You remember the end of that cartoon? Where Bugs Bunny gets hypnotized to thinking he's Elmer J. Fudd? And Elmer J. Fudd goes bebopping down the road to the tune of the bunny hop, wearing a rabbit suit, and turns to the camera and says, I may be a squooey wabbit, But at least I ain't going to Alcatraz. Yeah. Well, Alcatraz is also not in Donald J. Trump's future either. But this probably leads to a notion that maybe, well, the New York Times obtained the tax data, made a point of saying they got it from the IRS and that it wasn't some third-hand data from a number-crunching outfit, so that kind of lets Mazars out. That it was real, live, honest-to-goodness IRS stuff. Which, of course, in turn led Donald J. Trump out to the microphone. It's all fake news. It's fake news. It's not real. I pay so much tax. Yeah, which in its own right is proof that it's very, very, very real. Yeah. Yeah, earlier when I was talking about Brad Parscale, Silent R. Lamar says, just saying, Bob, my question is, why is Mr. Pissale not dead? Oh, could it be he's white? He was pretty white. Yeah. Flavio pointing out, get a load of the sheer solicitude of the cops toward Parscale. Word of the day, solicitude. The password is solicitude. Meanwhile, Randy Radar pointing out, big data is a $300 billion per year industry. That's a lot of scratch. That's a lot of rat fucking. Yeah. So, right, there's the tax thing. It's not running well for him. As Flavio puts it, Trump paid $130,000 to screw Stormy Daniels, but only $750 to screw America. Well, I guess it tells you where his priorities lay. Oh, Bob, says Megan, it gets better. Candace Owens is already on Twitter calling for an investigation into the New York Times because how dare they obtain the private financial information on a sitting president. Yep, that's her takeaway from all this. There's not enough liquor in the universe for all this. Oh, I know, Megan, I know. A number of people, when I've put up my little posts about having quit smoking and quit pretty much everything else except eating the world, have pointed out, Bob, you picked, and I think Texas Tea was one of them, Bob, you picked a lousy time to quit sniffing glue. The line from, of course, Airplane. So here I am. Everybody else, you know, feel free. Do what you got to do to get through this, but amateur Uber driver, Odysseus for the modern era, Bob Kincaid is lashed to the mast, listening in complete sobriety to this mad siren song. And somewhere along the way, we have to sort of do some analysis and ask, will this make any difference? The revelations with the taxes. I mean, Brad Parscale's just another Moran Monday story. There's not been enough pressure applied to him yet to make him start singing. He is thus far still managing to observe the ancient code of Omerta. Well, you know, whatever works for you. It's like what Hunter S. Thompson said. I hate to suggest the use of alcohol and hard drugs, but they've always worked for me. That was Hunter Thompson. Trey in Kentucky Stan says, recreational pharmaceuticals, Bob, for me at least. Well, at least try to, Trey, at least try to follow the Keith Richards rule. That is, only use the good stuff, the really pure stuff. That's what he credits his long life to. And, of course, now his continued survival to the fact that he's quit everything. No more walking around with a one-liter bottle of orange, of you know, Stoli Orange or Absolute Mandarin or any of that stuff. Nope, it's all gone. But just stay safe, Trey. Stay safe. Thank you, Charles. Charles says on Facebook or on Twitter, at 2 weeks, you've won the battle against smoking. You successfully quit. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you, Charles. Thank you kindly. So that gets us started on More End Monday, but we are far, far, far from finished. Oh, yeah. And by the way, Joe Biden, at the same time that Donald J. Trump was paying $750, which frankly most of America is amazed that he even had it had on him, at the same time he was paying $750, Joe Biden was paying $92,000. Yeah. They're already out there, Flavio says. They're already saying it's Trump savvy he avoided taxes. And we'll find out whether that's savvy or criminal intent, because this sort of points to the idea that Letitia James is, from the New York State standpoint, probably going to be making his life miserable. Incarceration, Ron and Raleigh says, Donnie will probably end up here in North Carolina in Butner like Bernie Madoff. They have a golf course. Although as fervently as I wish to see Donnie in big ol' orange jumpsuit, being led to the Gray Bar Hotel. Yeah, I guess he's a little too old to make little rocks out of big rocks. Peter Strzok, who of course was slimed within an inch of his life by Trump, he showed up on MSNBC this evening. And, of course, he's read the New York Times story, as has just about everybody by now. And as a member of the FBI, Peter Strzok says, said that it wasn't so much what was in the report as what wasn't. Part of the concern of any counterintelligence professional is looking for these hidden financial entanglements. And watching and having done that over six different administrations, every foreign country is trying to use money to get leverage and influence on any given presidency. What the information in the New York Times reports out of those tax records, the breadth and volume of that monetary back and forth is stunning. It's simply unprecedented in any president in modern history. So if you look at the ways that can be used as leverage over Trump, you have to think of this first and foremost as a national security issue. Yes, this is a financial issue. But first and foremost, the ways that it can be used to impact the national security of the United States, by the way, can be used against Trump, is unprecedented and deeply concerning. He went on to tell Nicole Wallace, what we're seeing, what I understand that the New York Times saw, were overt records. The stuff that was submitted in broad daylight. What this isn't is anything that's hidden or, you know, intended to remain off the books. And, of course, that's the environment where most foreign intelligence services, certainly sophisticated ones, are going to try to operate. So I wouldn't expect to see necessarily, without getting into any sort of classified detail or investigative detail, I think it's reasonable to assume that many countries are well capable of placing money into Trump or his interests around him in a way that doesn't show up on the books, that isn't going to show up on filings with the IRS. So the absence of that information doesn't surprise me, but that is very much something I would expect to see had that counterintelligence investigation taken place. And there is where the emphasis goes. Had that counterintelligence investigation taken place. Nicole Wallace, along the way, pointed out the manner in which Nitwit Nero responded to the butchery of Jamal Khashoggi, you know, on orders from Mohammed bin Bonesaw, the crown prince of the noble, graceful, high, majestic, puissant kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Nicole Wallace wondering aloud if, and why you would have to wonder, I don't even know, wondering aloud if Julius Geezer has some sort of, and these were her words, side hustle going on. Yeah. Not to mention, and yes, this is part of it too, Asa points out, Brother Deacon, not to mention $70,000 in hair care products. How? How? Okay, let's be really, really fair about this. Let's say it's not $70,000 in 1 year. Let's say it's $70,000 in 2 years. That's still $35,000 in hair products. All right, that's ridiculous too. Okay, 17.5 over 4 years. How? How do you spend $17,000 a year in hair products? Look, the vast majority, because I do not wish to be perceived as sexist in this, the vast majority of hair care products are marketed to women. That's just a fact. I mean, you got your volumizing hairspray, and you got your slicking it down hairspray, and you got your stripping shampoo, and your color your color enhancing shampoo. I mean, there's some expensive shampoo out there. You know, every time I think of the word shampoo, I always wonder what happens to, what about the real poo? Shampoo. Yeah. And there you have it. Hair care products. Prescriptions, asks Randy in PA. Well, you know that Nitwit Nero would never use one of those geriatric prescriptions. And he has been on Propecia for decades. Now, Propecia, this was disclosed. They disclosed his Propecia habit. But that's another one of those interesting things. Propecia is the trade name for something called finasteride. Flavio says 70K, not 17K. Get your ciphers right. 70K. That's what I said, Flavio. 70K a year, 35. Okay, maybe it would be, if it was 2 years, it'd be 30. No, but 70K a year? If it was over 4 years, it'd still be 17.5K a year over four. Like I said, though, Propecia is the brand name for something called finasteride. And it does, in fact, grow hair and prevent the progress of male pattern balding. The funny thing about Propecia, though, is that it, generic Propecia, $20. Generic, $26. Can't find a, you reckon he's using Rogaine 2 or something? That's minoxidil. Okay, here's something weird. Kier laser cap system for hair regrowth. Month-end sale pricing. Free two-day shipping. $925. And it comes with some fluids and... Yeah, well. We're probably not going to sort that out. But the funny thing about Propecia is that it started out as a drug for something called BPH in men. Benign prostate hyperplasia. That's where your a man's prostate enlarges and makes it hard to go pee-pee or makes him get up two or three or four times a night. It's not cancerous. It's just swollen up because, you know, intelligent design. It thanks because the prostate sits there around the urethra and it's intimately involved with the reproductive system as well. And when you've got benign prostate hyperplasia, you don't have cancer, but it's still a real pain in the Johnson. And so this, so the Propecia keeps the finasteride keeps the prostate from getting all big. It'll actually shrink it. But it has some sexy time consequences as well. It suppresses the body's ability to respond to testosterone and its more potent offshoot, dihydrotestosterone. Bob, says Ron in Raleigh. Donnie's buying a lot of hair restoration products, including getting chimp testicle implants. As far as Dale's concerned, he won't have to worry about what's left of his hair after the entrance haircut. Oh, that's both horrifying and delightful to ponder at the same time. Well, hopefully not, but Randy warns me. Now you'll get deluged by hair growth spam ads. Well, maybe I can find something to work on my own little bald patch. That'd be nice. Darlene wants to know, where did the New York Times get the overt tax returns all of a sudden? From Mary? Seems she may have more up her sleeve to release at opportune times. Mary was my best guess. But the thing is, there are so many people now, and we know, that everybody around him has known that Donald Trump will fuck them sooner or later. So everyone around him has probably been gathering evidence the whole time. And if any of them, if they perceive that he gets close to fucking any of them over, out comes the data. So, yeah, Darlene, I'd say that Mary's probably at the top of the list, but I don't think she's the only one on it. Oh, no, 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 no. Miss Plum's there, too, and Colonel Mustard, and Mr. Green, and Miss Scarlet, and, yeah, the whole Clue gang. And meanwhile, this, Bob! You know what that means. As we wrap up the first hour of the program. Giraffe and I went for a ride yesterday, and we drove from downtown Akron to the west side of Akron and all the way to the northwest Akron suburbs, including Bath Township, a very wealthy area just outside of Akron. Good news! What's that, Giraffe? Giraffe would like to announce the good news in his best analytical prose. I, Giraffe, the giraffe, I'm pleased to divulge the numbers after careful statistical analysis and precise, meticulous accounting measures. And those would be, the Biden signs outnumbered the Donald displays by a margin of 10 to 1. Thank you, Giraffe. We can always count on you. Ah. One more thing. Did somebody say Bath? Yes, Giraffe did mention, Bath, and I know what Giraffe is going to say. Bath, England is where the famous Roman baths, and it's Bath, England, not Bath, baths. The Roman baths were built in the first century. Bath, England, ironically, is also the home of the pop rock group Tears for Fears. Okay, please don't turn your computer or cell phone off. As one of Tears for Fears' biggest hits was Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Actually, not everybody wants to rule the world, just Putin and Trump. And speaking of dictators, on this day in 1989, Ferdinand Marcos died just 3 years after the People's Movement toppled Marcos in Manila. Let's topple Trump, November 3rd. Yes, do let's. I had to laugh when Bob and the other Horn members picked up on the fact that I had inadvertently once again confused Tears for Fears and the Thompson Twins. I've confused those two groups, both contemporaries of the mid-80s and both from England, many times in the past. Once at a college radio station, another time at a wedding as a DJ, and now in Joey's Journal. Huh. I was working at the college radio station when they came and played WVU. We're fairly contemporary, Joey. Did they come and play in beautiful Athens, Ohio? Wouldn't have been a far run. Morgantown to Athens. Other 80s acts that I've mixed up over the years are Joan Jett and Pat Benatar, the Bangles, and the Go-Go's. At least I've never mixed up Elton John and Olivia Newton-John or Wayne Newton with Juice Newton. Hey, Bob, you were talking to Flavio last week about Writ of Mandamus. Do you remember the 80s rock group Falco? Falco wrote a song about Mozart, and you could say for Falco, the song they wrote was a... Oh, Jesus, really? Writ of Amadeus. Rock me, I'm a dumbass. Rock me, I'm a dumbass. No, not you, Joey, me. I thank all of you who take the time to correct me along the head-on radio network, whether it concerns factual errors or grammatical mistakes. I appreciate your advice because that's what sets progressives apart from the maggot morons, considering you can't tell these idiots anything. They only listen to right-wing talk radio and Fox. Now, Joey, there's another one of those corrections. They also pay close attention to Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. They do not read a newspaper, and most importantly, they refuse to critically think or perform any self-introspection. There's no talking to these morons. Yes, the Thompson Twins were the group of which I was referring, and they sang the song Lies, Lies, Lies. Yeah, and yes, the Thompson Twins were originally from Sheffield, England, the home of my great-grandmother Lily. And finally, my great-grandmother Lily sailed on the last voyage of the ill-fated Lusitania. That's what I thought. During World War I, as the Lusitania was sunk by a German U-boat on the ship's very next voyage from New York back to Liverpool, which provided the necessary catalyst to get the United States into the First World War. Fortunately for me, Joey says my great-grandmother was a progressive, introspective person who was willing to listen and take the advice of others as she took the prudent direction of her mother. Just days short of her 22nd birthday, she was not sure if she really wanted to leave for the States, but her mother implored her to leave because World War I was spreading to England. Again, fortunately, she did, or I would not be here, and arguably neither would be Giraffrey. This has been Joey's Journal for Moran Monday, the 28th day of September, with Giraffrey always listening to the mothership. Oh, now, we get you. Really, you're going to drop a Parliament Funkadelic reference there, right there at the very end of Joey's Journal? Oh, well, so be it. So be it. So, that's true. Randy in PA says Mary has Trump-related DNA. Yeah, and they don't take kindly to being, what's the word I'm looking at? Yeah, fucked over. Don't take kindly at all. So that gets us to the top of the hour, and we haven't even gotten to Judge Handmaid. Oh, note coming from our buddy Thomas, Jug of Punch. Summit County, Ohio. I can report that I noticed the Biden signs outnumber Trump signs on my drive today through Hudson. Hudson, like Bath. In Ohio, it's Bath. In England, it's Bath. Hudson, like Bath, is in Summit County and is a very well-off community. What Trump lacked in numbers, the signs made up for it in size. Well, everything Trump has to be big, because he is, after all, at all points in time, compensating. That's the term we're looking for, right? Compensating. And since Joey referenced Falco. Flavio lets us know Falco was an Austrian singer-songwriter, not a group. Johann Hans Hölzel, umlaut over the O, better known by his stage name Falco, was an Austrian singer and songwriter. Was. He died 1998. Just made it past 40. Falco had several international hits, including Rock Me Amadeus, Der Kommissar, Vienna Calling, Genie, and The Sound of Music, Coming Home, Genie Part 2 1 year later, and posthumously Out of the Dark. Rock Me Amadeus reached number one on the Billboard charts in 1986, making him the only artist whose principal language was German to score a vocal number one hit in the United States. Bert Kampfert reached number one in January 1961 with the instrumental Wonderland by Night. According to his estate, he has sold 20 million albums and 40 million singles, which makes him the best-selling Austrian singer of all time. And I guess Neun Neunzig Schnupfballons never quite made it to number one. But anyway, as I mentioned earlier, we have to, I think, at least acknowledge the reality of what all of these revelations will mean relative to the maggots. And that's somewhere between 33% and 37% of America, depending on how dim a view you have of America. Yeah. And frankly, my view is pretty dim these days. Oh, hey, thank you to Kevin, friend of the program for a very, very, very long time. Not Kevin from Colorado Springs, different Kevin. Thank you to Kevin for jumping in and helping out. That's much appreciated indeed. Thank you. So anyway, somewhere between 30 to 37% of America will find a way to overlook, look past, ignore, and otherwise pretend that none of this skeevy, grafty bullshit is actually real. And the question then becomes, what is the value of these recent revelations? Because in particular, the maggots that will not be affected by this include the entirety of the Republican caucus of the Senate of the United States. It's not going to slow the Judge Handmaid juggernaut. And by the way, her handmaid name, I looked up Amy Coney Barrett's husband. And, you know, the naming convention for handmaids is that it's simply the owner's name with the preposition of placed before the name. So we have three possibilities. She could very easily be of Donald. That could be her name. Her lawfully wedded husband's name is Jesse. Jesse Barrett. No hyphenating with him. So she could be of Jesse. But in a moment that wasn't a particularly good look for her, when she was introduced on Saturday by Nitwit Nero and came walking out in her brown designer dress. Brown? Really? Well, it's autumn. What the hell? It's just a fashion observation. You know what that brown dress was for, right? No, I'm not kidding. The brown dress was a visual cue to remember the shit brown suits that Ronald Reagan used to wear. Mm-hmm. But when she spoke, and Jesus, the articles that came out after CNN, you know, Amy Coney Barrett shows that she will be a formidable foe for the Democrats who oppose her. She doesn't have to be anything at all. All she has to do is sit there. Because the fix is in. It's a boat race. The dice are loaded. The cards are marked. The most that the Senate can do, the Democrats in the Senate, is to slow the process. If it goes as planned, the game is to begin confirmation hearings on the 12th day of October and finish by the 26th. But it is possible that they can gum up the works enough. The 26th of October is the Monday before the next day is a week from the election. It's possible the Democrats may be able to gum up the works enough to push it out past the election. But no, as far as her handmaid name, and I did everything in my power to get the hashtag Justice Handmaid going and Judge Handmaid. When she appeared Saturday, she said, and remember, this is a woman who belongs to a religious cult. That says that women are not allowed to actually have and hold their own opinions if they differ from those of their master or husband. And I guess it's sort of just Freudianly kind of leaked out when she said, Antonin Scalia was an originalist, and his and his philosophy is my philosophy too. Isn't that just adorable? She was signaling to the world that she would be subservient to the right wing theocratic religious maniac men on the court. Jesus. Yeah. Now, expect in the coming days and couple of weeks that what we've already discussed on the program will come to fruition. And that is this incessant cry of religious bigotry because she's a Catholic. Bullshit. We'll get to that in a minute, though, because I want to... somebody's waiting on the stress line, and let's see what's happening there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Well, hey, Kevin, how are you? Long time no talk to.
Fine, it's been... Yeah, well, I think it's time that we connected.
And you've been around the world a bit.
I don't know. Yeah, and settled in Cape Town. South Africa, like, you know, my wife and I, my new wife, and it's, you know, it's been good. It's been good. We met in South Korea, lived together in Shanghai, did a long stint in Saudi Arabia. You know, I had to sell my soul a bit to that devil. And, you know, we planned and, you know, here we are.
Wow. And I mean, it's been a lot of years.
Yeah.
So you're in Cape Town now?
Yeah. I still keep my U.S. number and everything. You know, family no longer lives in Brooklyn. They moved to Florida and registered to vote in Florida. I'm just waiting for my absentee.
Well, your absentee ballot will be most useful in Florida. You still there, Kevin? Kevin? Okay, that's...
Hello?
Yeah, there you are. Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, Kevin, go, man. Well, apparently it disconnected. Don't know why. Try back, Kevin. Signs everywhere. Says Billable Rick. Based on my counting of signs and flags as I walk through Starr's neighborhood and drive around Orange County, the Trump signs and flags easily outnumber those of Biden. From that observation, am I to conclude that Biden is in trouble in California? I think not. That would be like concluding there's no water on the moon based on probes that landed near the moon's equator and found no water, and disregarding the results of probes that landed closer to the poles where water is believed to be present. Agreed. But I think California and Ohio are vastly different places, Billable. I mean, wouldn't you agree? Yeah. Okay, Kevin, let's try again.
Yeah. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, there you are.
Yeah, sorry about that. But, the family left Brooklyn. My mother was just getting too old for the house, you know, and she's based in Florida, of all places. And, you know, pretty much, you know, between her and a few relatives who live in a cul-de-sac in Florida. So that's why I'm registered to vote.
So have you gotten an absentee ballot yet, or is that something you're still waiting on?
I'm still waiting on it. They said they sent it on the 18th of September, and I don't think, and again, it's not that I don't trust the South African postal system. It's more the American system from what I'm hearing, you know. And because it's not a big deal. If I don't get it by next week, I'm just going to go to the U.S. consulate, request a ballot, and mail it in. That's all.
Well, good luck. I hope you can get it there in time. It was a couple of weeks ago, even here in West Virginia, Kevin, that we got a notice from the U.S. Postal Service saying, hey, if you're planning on voting by mail, give yourself all the time in the world. Dear postal customer, if you vote by mail, we're committed to providing you a secure, effective way to deliver your ballot. Use this checklist to prepare. Start today. Give yourself and your election officials ample time. Rules and dates vary by state, so contact your election board to confirm. Request your mail-in ballot, often called absentee ballot, really, at least 15 days before election day. Once received, follow the instructions. Add postage to the return envelope if needed. We recommend you mail your ballot at least 7 days before Election Day. We're ready to deliver for you. Make sure you're ready to your United States Postal Service. I thought that was kind of weird.
Well, I plan on, I plan on DHLing it. I'm not going to fool around with these people because, for all I know, there are probably rogue elements within the Postal Service, unfortunately. You know, I wouldn't put it past some of these people.
Oh, no. Well, you know, one of the earliest cases we had came out of West Virginia, Kevin, and it was a Trump supporter.
Oh, wow.
It was, and he's already been busted and convicted, but it was a Trump supporter who was changing ballots from Democrat to Republican. And he
How
said,
can they do that?
He said he was a postal worker, and he just said, oh, it was a practical joke gone bad.
Oh, man. But I, you know, and I guess I just kind of look upon it as, you know, there's nothing to be gained, and I'm talking globally, with another Trump victory, or even if the United States fall. I think I'm thinking of three possible scenarios, which is, you know, Biden wins, Trump will resign during the lame duck session, giving the presidency to what's-his-name so he can get pardoned for all his sins, which, well, Biden wins and he, you know, milks out this whole legal process. Or even if Trump wins, he loses the Senate and he will be impeached.
Well, no, I disagree, Kevin.
Okay.
He might be impeached, but even if Trump loses the Senate, he will not be removed from office because we're not going to get anywhere near the requisite 67 votes needed to remove, to convict, that is.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, I see that.
You know, remember, impeachment is like an indictment by a grand jury. You know, Donald Trump has already been impeached. He is an impeached president. The maggots refuse to believe it, but the maggots, you know, are a bunch of mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing freaks.
Yeah.
He's been impeached already. He may, if he gets a second term, he will probably become the first president to be impeached more than once. But even if the Democrats take the Senate, he will not be convicted because there's no way of getting to 67 votes. Barring an absolute miracle among the maggot contingent of the Senate. What would be different if the Democrats can take the Senate, look, I don't want him impeached a second time because I don't want him in office long enough to be impeached a second time. Our country, I mean, I know you're there and we're here, but our country is ablaze with COVID-19. We've got to get Joe Biden so that we can get a handle on this goddamn thing. But the larger point is, though, if he were to be impeached again and the Democrats did hold control of the Senate, that would mean the Democrats were in charge of the rules, which would mean, for instance, that witnesses would be called.
Right.
Which would be dramatically different from what happened last January, February, where they had a trial without any evidence. In other words, a sham.
Yeah, because so another thing is that I don't think this time around the Russians have their hands in it because, you know, living in China and living in all those countries, it's not within their interest either. And I say this because, you know, based on my experience living overseas, most of the middle class elements of these countries, guess where they put every leftover penny you can think of?
America.
Guess what they do with their money?
Yeah, because we are the most stable economy on earth.
And it's not because they, you know, necessarily. You know, they're buying the American debt, you know, Russia, China, all the BRICS nations. So even like these Russian oligarchs, you know, Vladimir Putin may have them as puppets on the string, but not totally, because if you put a united front, they can turn on him. You know.
Well, but I want you to remember something. I want you to remember something, Kevin, with particular emphasis on Russia. Russia knows that they're not going to topple our economy. All right?
Yeah.
But the investments will remain safe. But what Russia wants is chaos. They got Trump. They wanted Trump because they knew Trump was a chaos agent. But the bottom line is, Putin and the rest of those thugs thrive in chaos. And when the United States' relationships with the rest of the world are at hazard, that allows them to survive and sometimes thrive. Remember, the Russian economy is nothing. It's a garbage economy. It's based on extractive industries and climate change, and you know, this is still a nation that can barely, if it even can, feed itself.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I worked with a lot of Russians in Saudi Arabia because they're in the oil business there, and again, they are buying every single dollar or euro or pound they can get their hands on. They're not buying rubles. Same thing with the Chinese. And the reason why the U.S. dollar is such a stable entity is because the U.S. government says it is. It's not by any gold or anything like that. And that's because there's still that stability of rule of law that a lot of countries don't have. You know, Europe has it, but their economy is nowhere near that of the United States. And I'm the last person to gin up the United States, but I'm just saying from what I see it as being and based upon my experience living overseas.
I understand.
So, yeah. So I don't think it's within their best interest. Yeah, they want a bit of chaos to probably put the United States, you know, humiliate the United States a bit. And they've had a four-year laugh. But if the United States goes, that's the fall of the Roman Empire all over again. And nobody wants that.
I really don't think that that's a substantial risk in the next couple of years. Now, part of the reason we fucked up the pandemic response was because he flipped out when the stock market forgot every gain that had been made since he became president.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, we're in dire shape among America's working class. Among the people who actually make this country go, who work for minimum wage, who, you know, back when during the lockdown, we suddenly appreciated as essential workers, people risking their lives in grocery stores, in convenience stores, gas stations, pharmacies and the like, retail corporate pharmacies. Yeah. Well, thank you, essential workers. Well, we've largely forgotten that, but the pandemic's not gone. We've got to have help for those people. Yeah. You know, my son looked at me as I drove into work today, and he said, "Dad, do you think there's going to be another stimulus?" And I said, "I've been telling you for months, son, no. There will not be any further stimulus until such time as we get Donald Trump out of office."
Out of office, it's hard. It's hard. I feel bad. But, you know, again, you know, for years put it to this way, in certain countries, I couldn't even get in touch with you, i.e. Saudi Arabia and my second stint in China. Okay, because of the firewalls they have.
Yeah, the Great Firewall of China, right.
Yeah, and Saudi Arabia. And, you know, I was able to contact you when I stayed in Shanghai back in 2011, but this guy kind of, you know, they had to stay kind of doubled down, and it became that much harder. You know, simple VPN wasn't going to work anymore. And, you know, also a lot of it was probably in those countries is not the best idea to be overly opinionated, if you know what I mean. And, you know, third, I just needed a break, you know, from everything, you know, but like, you know, and probably it's no reflection on you or their opinions, Bob, believe you me. It's just sometimes you just need that mental break just to focus on.
Oh, no. You're preaching to the choir. I mean, one of the things since Ferg started his job is that he's been working on weekends, which means that I don't get a weekend. I haven't had an honest to God just hang around the house and not have to do anything that I didn't want to. I haven't had one of those since mid-August. It used to be I kind of dreaded the weekend because I'd sit there and have to be quiet for a couple of days. But in the 4 years of Trump, the weekend has become absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And when you can't have that, you feel a little less than great.
Oh, yeah. 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 Because, and the thing is, probably if it weren't for my family, that school was in, out of all places, Florida. You know, I don't know. Maybe I would have to just tune out, you know, my American life, you know, just to keep that level of sanity, you know. Because it is hard and it's emotionally draining, you know.
Oh, I can well imagine.
You know, it's like I think, yeah, you know, it's like I thank God, you know, every day that I have, you know, or the powers that be, you know, I don't want to put religion on this, but that I was able to exercise options. Because a lot of people can't; they're stuck. You know.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and it is what it is, you know, but.
By the way, Randy in PA just pointed out you are the first caller to the horn. I mean, you're a friend of long standing, going way back to when you were in New York and Florida. But you are the first caller to the horn from the African continent.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So I think that merits a cowbell.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And unfortunately, this is a rarity that I'm up this way because don't forget, I'm like 6 hours ahead of you. So, you know, usually the missus and I are asleep. I only get to listen to you via the podcast. So, you know, this is just one of those sleepless nights kind of thing.
Yeah, understood.
You know, not that I'm thinking or doing anything.
So are you still teaching?
I teach online now, remote.
Is that your primary gig?
You know, that. Yeah. And I'm doing some little IT work and upping my skills a bit, you know, because I used to be in IT when I was back there. But yeah, and my wife teaches theater at a private school here. So.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, we're doing okay. Yeah. Yeah, we're doing okay. Yeah, you know, and quite happy, beautiful scenery. You know, it's like.
Oh, Cape Town's,
you know,
gorgeous.
You can get all four seasons. Yeah, you can get all four seasons in an hour, you know. But it's, you know, we went through a rough patch with the drought a year or two ago, but that's gone now. And, you know.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but the waters off of Cape Town can be pretty sharky, right?
Off the coast, but strange enough, the sharks aren't around this year. They've all kind of migrated to Australia. I think they've been having some killer whaling, you know, orca incidents, you know. But shark attacks have gone down, really. You know, in the past year or so.
So just as a matter of curiosity, when you decided to, what made you settle on South Africa?
Well, my wife is South African.
That makes sense.
We came here, and my first time coming here was back in 2012, fell in love with it, and strangely enough, Cape Town's a lot like New York, especially Brooklyn. A lot of the street names, okay, like Brooklyn, originally settled by the Dutch, Cape Town taken over by the British.
But originally settled by the Dutch.
Yeah. And, that was a factor also culturally. Cape Town, you know, if you remember, my family's from the Caribbean, so there's a lot of cultural similarities. It's like Cape Town's like the best of Europe, the Caribbean, and New York all mixed into one, I feel.
And you are far enough south, and you're far enough south that you, like as you mentioned earlier, you get four seasons.
Yeah. We don't get snow, but that's further north, ironically enough, because we're like trapped in like the what they call, and it's, I keep on mispronouncing it, the Hot North Mountains. We're kind of trapped in that old little weather bubble, because once you pass that mountain range, you're in the Kalahari Desert, you know. So it's kind of like, I think, because I've never been there, like Washington State, where half the state is like forest and green, and the other half, if you go,
yeah, Washington and Oregon both. Once you cross the mountains, you're in arid regions.
Yeah. That's how the Western Cape is. And so, you know, you get that. But like in the northern cities, it's snow. Like Johannesburg, it can get snow, and other parts. The Ceres Valley definitely gets snow. And strange enough, they have ski resorts here. You know, not big ones, but, you know, you think African skiing, you know, that's an oxymoron, huh? You know.
So you've been there how long? Okay.
Well, living here now, it's going to be 18, almost 2 years. But I've been coming down like almost every holiday since 2012. We, you know, bought a house here last year. You know, and that was all part of the whole transition period, because it just came to a point where, you know, South Africa was becoming more home than the United States. You know.
Well, you picked four good years. You picked 4 good years to stay the hell away. How is South Africa handling the pandemic, Kevin?
Actually, quite well. You know, we only had, in comparison, like only about 15,000 people, you know, die. Unfortunately, 15,000 people died, but it's nowhere near the United States. And what happened is there was, you know, they did kind of a martial law thing. Like for the first, during the month of March to June, it was a hard lockdown, 3 months. They banned alcohol. So, you know, you had army vehicles out on the street, and some people were complaining, but it worked. It worked. And, you know, thank God, like, the democratic process here in South Africa is so ingrained, you know, the restrictions were lifted for the most part. Not to say South Africa is.
So y'all never got overwhelmed. Your hospitals didn't get slammed.
At first, yes, you know, like the initial, but that kind of eased off as the weeks went by.
Okay.
You know, Yeah, you know, the first, like, month or two, you know, like New York was back in April and I believe May, it was like that here. But eventually the numbers lowered. You know, so.
Right. So I got to ask. I know that South Africa has some magnificent national parks. Have you been able to see any of those? One of them is what? Kruger.
Oh yeah.
Kruger National Park.
I haven't been to Kruger yet, but I've been to what is known as the Garden Route and Odo National Park, which is like a elephant reserve further east. And you know, I've been into the Kalahari Desert, you know, a town called Otsern, which is known as the home of the feather barons, you know, these guys who became millionaires off of selling ostrich feathers in the 19th century. You know, I've been to a few places, and of course, I live at the foothills of the national park, which is Table Mountain.
You can see it.
Yeah. You know, every morning.
Because that's just breathtaking.
Yeah. And it's an amazing place. And, you know, within less than a 5-minute drive, I could go to some of the best vineyards in the world. It's like, you know, I know you're on the wagon, so I don't want to rub it in too much.
That's okay. Rub away. Yeah. It's all right.
Good luck. Go. And good luck with giving up the smoking, you know. Good luck with that. And, you know, you have your support from 3,000 miles away.
I do appreciate it, my friend. I do.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, within the past month, it was like, I said, I need to get back in touch with the head-on people because, you know, you got to do good work, man. And I think you and Mike, I know quite a few people no longer on the air, unfortunately. There was a guy called Joe, Cup of Joe.
Joe Vecchio. Joe Vecchio. Peter Godbold passed away several years ago.
Oh.
That broke my heart.
Okay. And there's a gentleman in Florida, in Naples, I think.
Oh, you're talking about Guy James?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't heard from Guy in a while. I need to reach out to him, especially getting as close to the election as we are. And, of course, John Fox is still in Australia, and he's doing his thing with music and whatnot. Of course, during the shutdown, it's been a little bit more difficult. Just had a note from Cynthia out in the Bay Area. She says, I had the pleasure of visiting South Africa in 2004, and the trip included Cape Town. My impression of the area was like taking the best of Monterey, Carmel, Pebble Beach, Mendocino, and Hawaii, and wrapping it all up into one place.
Oh, yeah.
It was beautiful, and I also did a safari in Kruger National Park to see the animals. Oh, my God, of the few places I have been, South Africa was my favorite, and if I dare say so as an atheist, it was also very spiritual.
Oh, yeah, that it is. It's almost like, you know, like I say this to my wife almost every day, I'm almost scared to, and I know I'm going to have to go because the plan was for me to visit stateside this Christmas, you know, to visit my mom and family. But, you know, I'm not really looking forward to that because it's just crazy, especially in Florida. it is crazy.
I'm not gonna try to convince you otherwise.
Well, I plan on going out there next year, probably, you know, whatever plans we have for this year, do it next year in 2021. I guess, you know, the long distance flights are going to be, because I'm not getting on a plane until there's a vaccine. Because planes are filthy things.
Well, yeah, under the best of circumstances, right. Exactly. No argument here.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're not going to go anywhere on a plane until there's a vaccine, an approved vaccine. You know.
Oh, you mean not a shot of Trump brand vodka stuck in an injection ampule?
Whatever. Yeah, that's another one. But again, it's like I'm shocked. It's like, you know, even because people ask me how could
this happen to America? Yeah.
Hold the election fair and square. Hey, you know, I'm from New York. We already knew what Trump won.
Right, exactly.
You know,
well, listen, Kevin, I guess you're having kind of a sleepless night, but man, it's great to hear from you after so long.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, man. And I'll try not to be too much of a stranger. Try to do this at least once a month.
Oh, we'd love it. And, you know, little travel logs and little postcards from South Africa. It'd be great.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Okay, I will.
And give our best to your and our warmest regards to your lovely spouse. And hopefully we will talk. Hopefully it won't be such a doggone long time before our next conversation.
Yeah. Hopefully there will be huge change in the White House.
Oh man. Yeah. So, well, okay. Before you go, let me ask this: is there much of an expat population there in Cape Town?
But mostly European expat.
No, I meant American expat.
No. In my circles, I'm the only one from the States. But I don't see much of an American presence here. It's mostly British and Dutch and German. You know. You have certain enclaves here that are very much German. Yeah.
Well, you know, while we've been talking, I've been looking at pictures of Cape Town and everything, and one of the nice things coming out of my smoking cessation adventure is, like I said, I did a 5-mile hike yesterday. I put on my nice, comfortable, really, really old Merrell high top hiking boots, and went down. Yeah. There's a rail trail here that goes from town all the way down to the New River. It's 2 miles down, 2 miles back, and then I wandered around for a mile down there, went across the river on the catwalk to the railroad bridge and that kind of stuff. And I like to call it as voyage to the bottom of the sea, because you can basically, you start at the top of the trail and go down that old narrow gauge trail. And essentially what you're doing is you're going to the bottom of a seabed, and yet you're walking in air to do it. You never even have to get wet, but you're going to the bottom of a seabed that's 320 million years old.
Oh yeah. Is that the place where they have all those seashells in West Virginia?
Well, if you dig around, I'm sure there are some fossils, but it's the New River, which is certainly the oldest river in North America and one of the oldest on Earth.
Wow.
It used to flow east to west across the country, and emptied into what was then the Gulf of Mexico long about, St. Louis. Because that's how far up the Gulf of Mexico came.
Oh wow! One question: I used to stay in West Virginia on the weekends when I was living in Washington.
Right, over in the Panhandle.
Yeah, Martinsburg, and that was like an hour and a half because people from there were commuting to Washington.
Right.
How far are you from Washington, if I may ask?
Depending on how fast you're driving, anywhere from 5 to 6 hours.
Wow. Wow.
because you know West Virginia is a weird shaped state. So I'm down in the south central part of the state.
Oh, okay. Close to the Kentucky, Tennessee area, I believe.
Well, no. It's an hour to the state line, going toward Virginia, which is a route that takes you through Virginia and then Tennessee. And it's about an hour and a half to the state line going into Kentucky westbound.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then about 2.5 to 3 hours to get to Pennsylvania.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Yeah. I know you have other callers in queue, but one thing I must say, Virginia is a deceivingly huge state.
Oh, the state of Virginia? Oh, my God, yeah. It is so huge.
But deceivingly so, because when you look at it in the on a map, oh, it's not that bad. But when I drove from Washington down to Florida, the longest leg of that trip was getting through Virginia.
Oh, yeah, going down I-81, you're in Virginia for freaking ever.
Yeah. Every other state, 2-3 hours you can get through.
But yeah, and going down 95, you're in Virginia forever, too.
Yeah. Deceivingly huge.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed.
And not to mention when you go to the border of North Carolina, there's always traffic there, regardless of whenever you go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. You cross into North Carolina and everybody's having their NASCAR moment. You know, in a 1979 Caprice that's rusted out and has every Republican bumper sticker on it since Gerald Ford.
Wow! But I thought North Carolina went blue. Going blue.
They got a Democratic governor. They've still got two Republican senators, and hopefully that will be remedied in short order. The Republican incumbent right now is about 10 to 12 points behind his Democratic opponent.
Wow. Wow. Who I want to see out of office by any means necessary is Ted Cruz.
You're 4 years away from that, the next chance of that. Getting rid of the number two man in the Senate, John Cornholio, would be just fine by me.
Yeah. And of course, McConnell looks like a scared possum all the time. But, you know, but Ted Cruz is just something about him that makes my skin crawl. If I had children, I wouldn't allow them anywhere near Ted Cruz.
No, he's a creep.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, his own daughter doesn't like him. Oh, God. You know,
I want to see a Senate majority by any means necessary.
Yeah, yeah, and hopefully that will happen. You know, people will smarten up to a degree and just see how better their lives are. Because I just think it was a case of Obama didn't do enough. Or Michigan and those areas. Why?
Well, but Kevin, the more we look at it, the more it becomes obvious that the whole thing was gamed. It was all rat fucked.
Yeah. But also, I think these people got to realize, you know, and even Joe Biden, these jobs are never going to come back, and these people need to retrain. Because even in China, they're complaining about factories closing. And what happens 10, 15 years from now when 3D printing gets rolling?
Oh, it's coming. And, you know, everything else that goes with it, automated driverless vehicles and all of that shit. There's a changing world out there ahead of us. But again, I'm not one of those who's going to sit here and say Joe Biden will this and Joe Biden won't that, because again, unless you're Donald Trump, you are made by the presidency. Barack Obama came in January 2009 with a set of priorities and a to-do list that was radically different from what he had when he started running because, of course, George W. Bush had destroyed the economy. So he had to come in and start putting out fires instead of advancing an agenda of his own desires. And I think Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will be in a similar circumstance. Joe Biden may not be in favor of Medicare for all or universal single payer health care or whatever we care to call it, but the fact of the matter is, in a pandemic, the only way to beat it is if everybody can go to the doctor when they're sick. I don't care what you call it, but we have to have a system that does that. And people are going to have, and he's already said if he gets in, there's going to be a lockdown and there's going to be a mask mandate and everybody will be taken care of. And if he has a cooperative House and if he has a cooperative Senate, then we can do all of this.
Yeah, yeah. Because even in South Africa, it may not be the best, but there is health care available, even for its poorest citizens.
Yeah, that's not here.
Something there.
Yeah, that's not here. Not at all.
Fortunately, here health care is so inexpensive that I can afford private health insurance, my wife and I. But let's say we were like, you know, the poor South Africans, there is something out there for them. You know, because part of the thing is, if you go to medical school, you have to do residency in a rural or impoverished area here.
Yeah, that's downright enlightened.
Because we have a friend whose daughter just completed medical school, and she had to do her residency somewhere up in close to Soweto, which is no longer an impoverished area, but it's still close to that area. You know, the most famous area is Soweto.
Yeah.
In that area. And it was a rural northern township area. And she had to do her residency up there. But Bob, I think you have callers on the queue, right?
Well, there may be, but it's been a grand hour talking to you, Kevin. I haven't talked to you in a long time, so this wasn't exactly wear out your welcome because it's been a long, long time.
Yeah, and I'll try to do this monthly. I'll try to make at least one night a month where I can get you, most likely on a Friday.
Well, Fridays are Friday on the front porch, so you may have to just jump in on the group discussion then.
That shouldn't be a problem, but I definitely hope we could be talking under better circumstances. And, you know, I just want to tell everyone out there, stay strong. You know, I just don't think it's within the global interest that Trump, you know, wins again, but, you know, if he does, you know, things will change one way or another. And, you know, it's easy for me to be optimistic, but I just don't think it's going to be the doom and gloom, you know, it is, you know. But still stay strong and do what you got to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, my brother. Love to the Head On family, okay?
All right, and you too, and you and yours. Take care, Kevin.
Okay, Bob.
Bye-bye. Later now. Bye. Our buddy Kevin, haven't heard from him in ages. And Kevin's been all over the world, but he's in Cape Town now, and that was a wonderful conversation. If you want to engage in some conversation, you're mighty welcome to do so. The stress line's open, 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676. Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, and then 304-574-8178 comes in on the Skype line as well. So there's multiple ways of getting in, and we will we're entering the third hour of the program. Shorty in L.A., Kevin got it right. People do have to retrain. The reason you have to retrain is they need someone that will repair the machines in those automated factories, because they haven't quite gotten to the point where the machines can fix the machines. Precisely. Thanks, Shorty. And, you know, I was talking earlier about, I loved that hike yesterday. And it was it inspired me. I don't mean like I went out and painted a picture or anything. But it was sort of a gut check at the 2 week mark. And it winded the hell out of me on the uphill side, and I stopped and took a little breather here and there, and there's little benches along the way, and I availed myself of them. But I got back in good form. And I feel pretty successful. I mean, it drops a total of 540 feet. That trail drops 540 feet in 2 miles. From the top down to the river. And so that's a decent slope. So I feel confident that maybe I can do more of the same in different places if, you know, the fucking pandemic ever lets up. Right. So getting back to some of the madness at hand, like I said before I took Kevin's call, one of the things that you're going to be beaten over the head with in the next few weeks is that the Democrats are religious bigots because they don't want Amy Coney Barrett. Well, clearly that's just a giant honking lie because, hell, we nominated a Roman Catholic. His running mate comes from a Hindu tradition. Sonia Sotomayor is Roman Catholic. Elena Kagan's Jewish. That's the lie they're going to tell. And so on something like Moran Monday, well, it wouldn't be Moran Monday. It just becomes more Moran when we've got a clip from, that's right, E.W. Jackson, who, of course, spends a lot of time talking about big old hairy sweaty man. Maybe not today.
So I just had a quick, I guess, comment or question. For all of these folks, when they go up to the Senate to get vetted, I thought it was against the Constitution to use a religious test. Why are they not censored or reprimanded or whatever you would call it when they do that by Mitch McConnell or whoever the leader is for doing that? I'm talking about the senators now who ask these questions that are basically using a religious test.
What the fuck does against the Constitution mean? I thought it was against the Constitution. Well, the Constitution does say there shall be no religious test for the holding of office. But it doesn't mean what this moron thinks it means. He's talking to one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers. And let's make sure that we understand that there shall be no test for religious office means that the federal government can't say, well, you got to be a member of the Church of England if you want to, you know, or you got to be a member of this or a member of that. But you can't be this and you can't be that. No one is imposing a religious test for the holding of office on Amy Coney Barrett. I mean, I'm sorry, Judge Handmaid of Donald. It is more, it's about philosophy, not denomination. And she is a wild-eyed freak. Judge Av Donald is. And remember, just in case you're wondering, just because you get nominated to a seat on the court doesn't mean you have to accept it. Judge Av Donald comes from the 7th United States Circuit Court of Appeals, where she was put in 2017 by Donald Trump. Huh. Wonder why there was a vacancy on the 7th United States Circuit Court of Appeals. Darnest thing, that. Well, there was a vacancy on the United States Circuit Court of Appeals for the 7th Circuit because back in Barack Obama's term, a seat came open when a noted African-American jurist retired. And Barack Obama promptly nominated an African-American woman to fill that seat. Mitch McConnell refused to move on that nomination because, of course, there's not a racist bone in Mitch McConnell's body. But he wanted to hold that seat open for a Republican. And so Amy Coney Barrett, you know, Judge of Tony, you know, fat dead Tony Scalia, Judge of Tony gleefully accepted her appointment. And then, of course, the Republican Senate went at light speed to install her in the office on the seat. But the upshot of it was, by accepting that nomination and taking a seat on the 7th Circuit Court of Appeals, instead of the African American woman who could have been, who would have been as good or better than Judge Ov Donald, well, she turned, Amy Coney Barrett did. Amy Coney Barrett turned that Circuit Court of Appeals lily fucking white. There is not a single African-American face on that court anymore. And we have Amy Coney Barrett to thank for it. How about that? By the way, our buddy Jake, new moniker for Hadrian Horribilis. Tax Avoidus Tiberius, waiting for that cowbell, Bob. Well, here it is, Jake. Thank you kindly. So when this idiot talking to E.W. Jackson, remember, that's how Flush Flimball pronounces it every time he mentions Jesse Jackson. So I guess it's just, right. She doesn't understand why they're... It's not a religious test. It is an objection to her arguably un-American viewpoints. Certainly undemocratic holdings. But she's an originalist. There, that's going to be a problem, having a female originalist on the court, because, well, if you're an originalist, you believe that the Constitution is static, that it has existed like a fly in amber since it was ratified in 1787. I presume Amy Coney Barrett plans on going and voting, if she hasn't already. But she, of course, has no business voting, because the original intent of the framers was that women would never vote in the United States of America. Period. So, as usual, we find out that so-called originalism is just a sham for mean-spirited right-wingery. You know, shitty, ham-fisted bigotry. Right. Just saying.
Instead of just questioning them on the merits of whether they are qualified or not.
Charlotte, you've asked a question that many of us have asked, which is, why do Republicans put up with so much? Why don't they speak up more forcefully when it is clear that the Democrats are behaving unconstitutionally and that they're doing things that should not be acceptable under any circumstances, and yet often what you get is silence? We're going to keep asking that question. I think we've just got to get people in the Senate and in Congress who are courageous enough to call them out when they do it. Somebody needs to say, you know, you all are religious bigots. For some reason, you've decided that you have it in for Christianity. You have it in for people who are actual believers and whose faith informs their understanding of life.
And yet this asshole is the same guy who has attacked other people's faiths for not being in line with his. And certainly people of no faith whatsoever have no place in government or even in America, as far as the Reverend E. W. Jackson says. I'm just bummed out because there's no mention of the big old hairy sweaty man in this.
Hate that. Look, we just might as well say it this way. These people hate God. They really do. They hate God.
How can you hate something that doesn't exist? Or even if it does exist, how can you hate something that doesn't talk, never shows itself, cannot be proven to exist? How can you hate the ethereal? What's the import of it? What does it matter? That's like saying, you hate Norblap 9. I mean, here on this program, we're absolutely sure that Norblap 9 exists, because after all, that's where the amorphous multi-limbed aliens of Norblap 9 come from. But to waste the emotion on hating them, or hating it, well, that's just weak-minded. But in E.W. Jackson's world, anybody who doesn't subscribe to his weirdo right-wing theocratic view of a Christianity he'd like to force on the rest of us, well, we're hating on God. That's what it is. Damn nicotine pouches induce the hiccups sometimes. Sorry about that.
We all know spiritually that that's what's going on here. And they can't hurt God. So they try to hurt the people who in any way are associated with or represent him. Yeah, why don't more Republicans, why doesn't the Senate as an institution clamp down on that and say, look, you will not attack people in this venerable institution based on their religion?
Oh, shut up and go and change your armor. Again, the hearings are supposed to begin in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now run by the hypocrite Lindsey Graham. On October 12th. And just a program note, I will be filling in for Mike Malloy October 12th, 13th, and 14th. And I'm going to try to make sure that I'll be in a position. Mike can't take calls right now. We've got to get through some technical stuff, and we're working on it. I'm working on it with him. But I'm going to try to make sure that I can take calls on the 12th, 13th, and 14th, because I think as the hearings begin, people are going to want to have a little something to say. So just take note of that. But as you watch the hearings, see if you can find any of this, and it'll be a unicorn hunt, make no mistake. See if you can find any of this religious bigotry that E.W. Jackson seems to think is rampant inside the Democratic Party in the Senate. Well, yeah, it depends on how they're using the term. States' rights is a sham, too, Randy in PA says, reference the green goons in Oregon. Well, yeah, it is and it isn't. Anytime a Republican says states' rights, you know that it means that they're sick and tired of having to treat brown or black-skinned people as fully functioning human beings. There's that constitutional originalism for you again. Wouldn't you love it if somebody questioning Amy Coney Barrett would just look at her and say, ma'am, you're a proud originalist. It might be particularly good if maybe Cory Booker or Kamala Harris would ask the question, ma'am, you're a proud originalist. Does that mean I'm 3/5 of a person? Because that's the original intent of the framers, honey. That'd be a beautiful moment. And of course, she would feign grave insult. And she would then pontificate for a while and filibuster. What you'd have to do is frame it as a yes or no question. Ma'am, you're an originalist. You're a proud originalist. You bragged about what an originalist you are. The original intent of the Constitution was that I be 3/5 of a human being. I'm 3/5 of a human being to you, aren't I, ma'am? It's a yes or no question. No filibustering. Reclaiming my time. Fuck off. Say yes or no. That would be delightful. Let's run back over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. This is Irwin.
Hey, Irwin. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm actually feeling pretty good. 14 days without a cigarette. Made a 5-mile hike yesterday on pretty steep ground. And I think I'm ready to hike some really cool other places if the pandemic ever ends.
Yeah. Well, that's congratulations on that. It makes a lot of difference in a person's health, I think. It did for me, anyway. But
one of the things I think I want to get is a camelback pack so I can carry 2 liters of water on my back for when you get really, really hot and worn out. But, yeah, go ahead. You enjoyed Kevin's call?
Yeah, I did, yeah. I don't remember him. I don't think I was listening to your show when he used to call. But
yeah, I think he's pre you.
Yeah, I am. So, but yeah, how about are your trails pretty well defined? I mean,
within the national park, they are. This particular trail is owned by the town, and it's nicely graveled. Basically, what they did is they came through and they pulled up the a coal company called Imperial Colliery, donated the land to the town, and then money was spent ripping up all the rails and most of the cross ties. There's one place where there's still some half buried cross ties, but it's a very nicely defined trail. You know, just little pea gravel. It's not hard to walk on, and you can bike it or you can hike it. And you can run it,
right.
But I'm kind of a klutz, so I get a little nervous about trying to run it because, you know, off to the side, there are drop-offs of up, 100, 200 feet.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, one good stumble and over you go.
Right. I don't know if I've told you, I do have family in West Virginia, and I contacted him like a year or two ago, and I've met different ones, and one current woman that's probably a kinfolk, as she does a lot of work with around Craigsville. Is that correct?
Did you say Craigsville?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, Craigsville's over in Webster County. It's not too far from me.
Right, yeah, and I know she's had some photos of a mountain there that where she's I think she says in a clear day she can see several states. Would that be right or not? Or would it be high enough to see over, see to it? Like to Virginia or whatnot?
From the heights around Craigsville, I'd say that'd be difficult. Now,
okay.
Over toward the eastern part of the state, that's why I wasn't sure whether you said Craigsville or not. There's a Hedgesville, and there's some tall mountains there, and I'm sure you could see into Virginia.
Right. No, I think it's Craigsville. She works a lot with this. It's called the Indian... Indian something state park there, where there's some overhangs with a lot of Indian pictographs or whatnot, and so she works a lot in there. And she was involved in Black Mind or Black Lung way back when, and she was saying about the all the reclamation, the crappy reclamation, and they've introduced two species, autumn olive and crowned vetch, that's just taken over everything.
Oh, God, I despise autumn olive.
Yeah, so she's kind of a plant specialist, and she's pretty upset about that. But
and we're cursed with several invasive species here. Autumn olive is one. Another is multiflora rose. There's some kudzu. But it's some nasty shit. Autumn olive, but particularly yeah. Multiflora rose. And again, deliberately introduced.
Right, yeah. Because it would grow quickly, I suppose, and you know that's probably why they did that. Take over the make a bare spot not bare quickly, I suppose. Yeah. So.
Well, yeah. Multiflora rose was brought in from out west, and it was billed as the living fence row.
Oh, okay.
But where it's manageable right. out west, out, you know, out like toward where you are, here, it just right. ran all over the place.
Okay. Yeah, we do have it here. It stays pretty much in one spot. Our rainfall is a lot less here, I think, but, and a little colder too, but, yeah. Well, you do have kudzu there too, right?
In the southern end of the state, yeah.
Okay, yeah, because in the 80s, I lived in Mississippi for a few years, and it became real familiar with kudzu down there. So,
and the funny thing is, kudzu is a beloved root vegetable in Japan.
Oh, but, it is.
Oh, in Japanese cuisine. But here, it's just a mess.
Yeah. Huh. Is it, you boil it or whatever, or is it
yeah.
just the root? It's,
yeah, it's yeah, the root. I'm looking here. There's a Japanese starch cake called kuzumochi, and it's kudzu starch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I read somewhere that they like burdock. You know, burdock.
Burdock is big too.
So
yeah.
I grew some of that. I didn't particularly like it unless I didn't prepare it properly. It was pretty bitter tasting, but maybe it's an acquired taste or something. But anyway, Kevin was talking about him not being able to talk freely in some of the countries he was in. I was in the federal government for a long time, and we were under the Hatch Act, where we had restrictions on what we could do politically too. And I was curious about that, so I just looked it up a little while ago. It actually was put into place by conservative Democrats under when FDR was in, trying to, I don't know the exact story, but evidently, FDR was thinking about vetoing it, and then he didn't, but, it was really restrictive for many years on what you could do, politically if you're in the federal service. And I've seen it's been loosened quite a lot, but, every time they've tried to loosen it, the Republican president will veto it every time. They don't want evidently they don't want the government employee involved in politics. So are you familiar with it in any way?
Oh, yeah. And of course, it's just been trampled in this administration, Irwin.
Right. Yeah. I'm just wondering what's going on there, you know.
Laws are only as good as the enforcement behind it. It's that simple. And you may have heard along the way my reference to my Tinkerbell theory of the Constitution. And, you know, in the play Peter Pan, Tinkerbell is dying, and the only way to bring Tinkerbell back to life is everybody has to clap for Tinkerbell. Because if you don't believe in Tinkerbell, Tinkerbell dies. Well, the Constitution's a lot like Tinkerbell. And we're finding out that it, too, can die just as easily. So when people don't believe in it. And so what you've got is a bunch of people who would pervert the idea of the Constitution and through right-wing politics and policies until it's no longer recognizable. I've said for a long time, for instance, that of all the things that are contained in the First Amendment, it has been reduced to little more than a life support system for the religion industry. You know, the reason that the Kenneth Copelands of the world can amass fortunes in the tens upon tens of millions of dollars is because they hide behind the skirts of the First Amendment's religious protections. Now, I was talking about the original intent, so-called originalism, which is just a sham and a fraud and a hypocrisy of the right wing. Well, if you're going to go with the original intent of the framers of the Constitution, then how in God's name can we have televangelists?
Yes.
Because while in 1787 there were certainly notable preachers and there were circuit riders, there were no mega churches. And you can't make an argument that Kenneth Copeland should be within the protection of the First Amendment. He's a businessman, and he runs an industry that is based upon religion.
Yeah. But that, with a conservative Supreme Court, that will never change, correct? Don't you think that each one of those conservative judges have promised to not touch religion as far as the tax?
Well, I mean, that's really not their role. That's for Congress to do.
Oh, okay.
And Congress would be within its rights in looking at these mega churches and saying, no, you already play in politics, it's time for you to pay taxes.
Yeah. Okay. So actually, they could. Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. I've often wondered why something hasn't. It must be too much of a hot potato subject to ever pursue by the Democrats.
Oh, the hue and cry that would arise from the religion industry would be audible on Mars.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it just seems like something should be done about it to me. Just practical sense. It's just having that, 20,000 or 10,000 people in a church, you just have to wonder what. And the Bible says if there's like two people, it's a church.
Yeah, where two or more are gathered in my name, there also am I, sure.
Right, so yeah, I just, I don't know, it's just, it's, you know, I'm not a non-believer, but I don't understand people that are right-wing Christians. I just, they just have cognitive dissonance or something. I just don't.
I think you're a little more, you're a little more generous than I am.
Oh, okay. All right. So that, okay. I don't actually have any in within my family, but, I know some, and, they just, you know, not, they, you know, to accept the teachings of Jesus and then to accept Trump both together just does not compute. I mean, it just doesn't compute to me.
Well, that's because you have a functioning primate brain. The people who think that Trump is a religious man are living solely on their amygdalas, their lizard brains.
Yeah. Right. There's really nothing a person can do about that, except.
Well, you can drive them back behind the baseboards. See, that's one of the reasons, Irwin, that we thought we were a better country than we are. Starting with the passage and the signing of things like the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, we thought we were becoming a better country, and for a little while we did. And of course, the South resisted it every step of the fucking way, right?
Yeah.
But we persisted and we enforced it. The Fair Housing Act. That's why Fred and Donald got busted in the 70s for being the racist scumbags that they are. Because we were actively involved in trying to be better people, a better country. But what we found out is that all along, and the evidence was there for anybody who cared to see it. I remember sharing and I've still got it here, a newspaper article that I found right after the snake entered the studio. It was wrapping up a piece of glassware, and it was out of the Sunday paper down in my hometown, September the 6th, and page 2, Klansman Group for Conference. And there's not a negative word in that article about a bunch of Klansmen gathering in Tuscumbia, Alabama for a national convention. There's nothing about them being a hate group or a terrorist group or even low-life scumbags. And so they were always there, but before the internet, Irwin, it was harder for them. You know, they had to stand there over the ditto machine running shit off. Or they had to pay for copies at the library in order to Xerox things. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the internet comes along, and all of a sudden, there's the new flowering of scumbags that were always there that we thought we had defeated. But they just went, they went to ground. And now, with a couple of things in this century, the successful candidacy of Barack Obama drove them batshit crazy and brought them out into the open. And then the ascension of Donald Trump to the presidency not only had them in the open, but gave them favored status. And so what we're dealing with here, I don't know how much, I was talking about Mark Twain with Darlene last week. There's another famous Mark Twain short story called The Man Who Corrupted Hadleyburg. And, of course, it's a metaphor for American society when Twain wrote it in the late 19th century. And it remains applicable particularly now. And Hadleyburg is a town that thinks it is comprised of entirely righteous people. And their town motto says, "Lead us not into temptation." And then something happens that causes that all to go sideways. I highly recommend anyone to read The Man Who Corrupted Hadleyburg and then understand that we are all Hadleyburg. The United States of America is Hadleyburg.
Okay. Twain was brilliant. He was, there's hardly a thing I read from him that I don't agree with and don't think, just have an aha moment with when I read his Mark Twain stuff. So I'll have to read that. Thank you. But I was going to say about the internet, and you're talking about the Klan. The internet helped out these people, like up here in Montana and whatnot, help them connect with other bigots, you know. I think, there's probably a big network right now because of the internet, like you were saying. And, I agree with what you said about that for sure. Well, I suppose, somebody else may want to get on. I hadn't talked for a long time.
I do see it, but I see your tweets though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I tweet every once in a while. I get a storm in my head. And, I was going to say that in our state, there's a possibility if the census is done correctly, that we can get another representative. We only have one right now, and it's Greg Gianforte, the guy that beats up reporters. But if he wants to be our governor now, but anyway, but I guess there's been problems with our census in our state not being run very well. There's also. Our lieutenant governor is running for governor. Bullock, of course, Steve Bullock is running for state for U.S. Senate against Steve Daines, and I've agreed to phone for him. But the campaign office, they all came down with COVID, so I haven't heard from them for a while. So. Hopefully they'll get back to me. And we have Kathleen Williams. She's trying to be a representative once she lost last time, and she's trying again. So she's very centrist, but it's Montana, so you have to be centrist too. That's kind of the politics of Montana, our little point in the world. And, I just want to let everyone know about that.
Well, is there a fighting chance that Steve Daines will be unseated, Irwin?
Well, he's the last. Bullock was down by 2 points here about 2 weeks ago. They were virtually tied. Steve Bullock's very popular, and there's a good chance, I think, that he can beat Steve Daines. Steve Daines he's an empty suit. He's not really a maggot sort of type person. He's very quiet, doesn't say much. But, he votes with up every time. So he's a typical Republican, but, he's not really disliked that much, you know. And so I'm hoping that people can overtake him. Our elections in the state are pretty good, pretty well run. And, they've tried some shenanigans like getting the Green Party candidate on the ballot. They tried time and time again to try to get the Green Party candidate on, and they couldn't do it. They also were trying to get, what's his name? The crazy black guy.
Kanye.
The rapper.
Yeah, Kanye.
They were trying to get him on too. That didn't work either. They didn't get enough votes.
Funny how the minute you said the crazy black guy, I knew you meant Kanye.
Okay, I hope I didn't make anybody mad.
Oh, no. I think there's a uniform agreement that Kanye's crazier than a sprayed roach.
Yeah, sure. But, that's kind of what politics of this state look like. And I'm hoping the ballots will arrive soon. I'm going to walk them across town to the ballot box. I'm not going to go through the post office, so at least I know my vote should be counted. So that's my plan. And I've wondered about trying to get some of the folks we have a university here, getting some of the young people fired up around, but I don't, with the COVID, it's kind of hard to get too fired up about getting out in public, you know. So, it's unfortunate. So I have to leave it to the younger guys, younger people to do that. So, hopefully we can get all three representatives as Democrats. We have a fighting chance. If we get Jim Forte, he's the second richest person in Congress. If he becomes our governor, I'm sure he'll try to want to become a billionaire. He's got about $500 or $600 million now. He'll probably want to become a billionaire. So. Well, who knows what he'll do to the state, but I'm pretty cynical about him.
I think you've got a right to be.
He's an out-of-stater. He's from New Jersey. He dresses up like Joe Farmer, you know that, you know, and with a big cowboy belt and buckle and, you know. I think he even chews snus, you know, he just tries to, he's so phony, guy's worth $500 million and I doubt his sincerity, I guess I would say.
Well, he's the guy who attacked a journalist, right?
Right, yeah. I don't know if it was a Daily Beast or something, maybe it wasn't. Yeah. Yeah, he tried to choke him, or he knocked him to the ground, and that was the day before the election, and that happened in Bozeman, which is south of here. It's a college town too, and the one station there is Sinclair Station. They didn't say anything about it. They didn't cover it. And I don't know if that's the only station in Bozeman or not, but anyway, the Sinclair station didn't say a word about it after he attacked the guy. And he didn't win by too much either. So, but you know, it's, believe it or not, we have Sinclair here in Missoula, which is the liberal center of the state, but they moved in here too. So. They're everywhere. Well, it's nice talking to you, Bob.
Good talking to you, Irwin.
Keep up the good work, and enjoy your show so much. And all the people that call in, I learn a lot every time I listen, so I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you being part of the community, Irwin. You take care of yourself now.
Okay, thank you.
All right,
bye.
Later. Calling from Montana, that's our buddy Irwin. Thanks for calling in, Irwin. Just a little bit of time left in the program. Here in a very short amount of time, I'm back in the car and back on the road as Bob Kincaid, amateur Uber driver. Oof. I had to pick Ferg up. He got off at midnight last night, and his relief decided not to come in until 12:50 a.m. So I got there on time and then just sat there in the car for 50 minutes as Ferg sat there in the store seething because he'd been hung out to dry by his relief. Yeah, but he's had such a hard time hanging on to jobs. He's got this one, and he's like a dog with an old bone with it. But I think last night he got as close to walking away from it as I've seen him yet. Because, well, I mean, as our pal Matt in San Francisco has pointed out, if everybody in this country had to spend a couple of years working retail, we'd be a lot nicer to each other. So he deals with, because it's a chain convenience store in a shitty part of town, he deals with some of the worst that the community has to offer. And 13 hours doing that will grind a body down to a fairly well nub. So in a little bit, I'm going to go get him, and I hope, and it's the same relief tonight. Ferg called his manager last night and said, I'm getting sick of this because the guy's done it to him over and over and over again. And the manager promised he would address the issue. I'd say there's about a 30% chance that he did, and a 70% chance that we'll be sitting there. I'll be sitting there for 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 minutes, maybe an hour or more, waiting for dude to come in. Sheesh. Oh, a note coming in from Cynthia. I love hiking myself, and I'm glad to hear you're hitting the trails. Keep it up, and the next thing you know, you'll be hiking down the Bright Angel Trail from the rim to the Colorado River in Grand Canyon. I've never quite done that, though back in 1962, I did hike out to the Plateau Overlook, where you can look down another 1,000 feet to the river. I was only 11 then, and I just remember how hard it was to hike back up. I'm 68 now and may never be able to do that again, but I would sure love to. Going down wouldn't be so bad. The real problem would be hiking the 5,000 to 6,000 feet back up to the rim to get out of there. If I can ever even remotely get into shape, I would still have to spread it out over a couple of days by camping down around Phantom Ranch. A worthy goal that I don't want to give up on yet, and that 68 people older than me have done it. I hate to mention, though, that there have been a lot of heart attacks among people climbing out. But hey, if I died somewhere climbing out along the Bright Angel Trail, then at least I'd have died trying to do something. Well, back to my physical therapy exercises so I can eventually hit some trails again. Keep at it, Cynthia. You'll get there. It takes time to get to wherever you are, and it takes time to get back to somewhere else. Keep at it. And I'm going to keep at it. Of course, I'm a little bit dicey on 5,000 or 6,000 feet, especially if I'm going to be out somewhere that the oxygen's already pretty damn thin. After having seen a bunch of the photos that our buddy Mike in Cascadia has sent along, I really, really would love to go out and hike in Utah. And just based on the scant little amount of time I had in Muir Woods, I'd really love to do some hiking in the big trees, because out among those redwoods was probably among the most sacred spaces I've ever been in. I've been to the Vatican, and Muir Woods was a hell of a lot more sacred than anything that's going on in St. Peter's Square. Michelangelo or no Michelangelo. So, that's me. Oh, and it was one of the funny things. There's a little side trail you can take, and it'll take you down to a closed-off coal mine from 1921, opened 99 years ago. And there's all the works alongside it that went with having a coal mine, and one of them is a big stone block wall made of, sandstone blocks. And I looked at it. I should probably put some of these pictures up on social media. I looked at it, and the first thing I thought of was the megalithic stonework architecture of the brilliant peoples of the nation we call Inca. to this day, we have no idea how they built them. And frankly, we probably, even with our technology now, couldn't build them if we wanted to. But compared to, say, the stonework of Sacsayhuaman or Cusco, those stacked stone blocks from that coal company 99 years ago looked like the half-hearted effort of somebody who really didn't know what the hell they were doing. You know, in talking with Irwin, I mentioned my Tinkerbell theory, and I got a perfect story to go with that. I trust you know or may have heard. If not, well, here's what happened. The Maggot administration has been hell-bent on fucking the census for well over a year now. They even had to get spanked by old Balls and Strikes John Roberts. They really didn't want to do a census. And if they did do a census, they wanted to do a very, very white census. I'm dreaming of a white census, just like the ones we used to have, where we didn't count people who were certain kinds of people as more than three-fifths of a soul. Sorry about that. Oh, and thank you for the Uber driver tip to our buddy Jeremy. Thanks a bunch, Jeremy. Much obliged. Appreciate you jumping in like you did. So, that's a help. Jeremy says, you're a pro Uber driver now. You're getting tips. Well, I don't know. I'm worried. I don't know what happens if I lose my amateur status. Bob, you're an amateur Uber driver, not a singer. All right. I know. You don't have to be mean about it. Randy in PA says, please wear a bear whistle around your neck. I'll have to see about that. But no, the census. The Maggot administration has done everything in their power to fuck the census because they just really don't want to count anybody but white people. And so in the latest salvo, this past Friday, with the Commerce Department and their creepy secretary, Wilbur Ross, the man with the blood of 12 human beings on his hands from the Sago mine disaster in West Virginia. Well, he said, fuck it, we're going to end the census. If we can't just count white people, what's the fun of it anyway? And announced that the census would be wrapping up early, shall we say. And he was taken to court, and on Friday, a federal judge, clothed in all the power and majesty of Article 3 of the Constitution, said, oh, no, you're not. You're going to keep counting until October the 31st, Halloween, by God. Well, here's your Tinkerbell theory in action. This is an Article 3 judge who can haul Wilbur Ross into court on a rule to show cause. And all Wilbur Ross is going to do is say, fuck it, I ain't going. That federal judge can pound sand because I don't believe he has any power. He's made his order, let him enforce it. For immediate release from the United States Census Bureau, Monday, September 28th, 2020, 2020 census update. The Secretary of Commerce has announced a target date of October 5th, 2020, to conclude 2020 Census self-response and field data collection operations. That's all it says. But that was released today after he was told by a federal judge, Wilbur Ross was, that he did not get to order the census be ended by October 5th. October 31st, said the federal judge. Fuck you, said Wilbur Ross. I'm a billionaire, a real one, not like Trump. So, I guess we've got a little mini constitutional crisis on our hands. Do federal judges really have the power that the Constitution says they do? Or does Wilbur Ross just get to order the census to end on October the 5th and let the federal judge do what he or she thinks they can? Not a betting man myself, but I'll bet you I know which way this goes. By God, you wish we lived in a kind of a country where somebody would show that press release to the judge and the judge would say, I need you to craft me an order real quick, compelling Wilbur Ross in person to appear before me tomorrow and show cause why I should not hold him in contempt and imprison him. But, well, I guess we just don't live in that kind of country anymore. At least not so long as it's Wilbur Ross or any other member of this maggot administration. Now, if it was some poor person, that's a different story. Because all that power and majesty, that still exists in those instances. Oh, hell yeah. Ralph's asking, if black people are three-fifths of a person under the Constitution, then what are Asian people? Not counted at that point in time. What that is, Ralph's, is that was the mechanism by which the South was allowed to maintain its damnable power over the northern states in exchange for ratification of the Constitution. In cases of the census, slaves were to be counted as three-fifths of a person for purposes of establishing the population of a state, which then determined how many members of the House of Representatives each state got. And they used that three-fifths clause to brutal effect for decades to maintain a cudgel with which to beat the non-slave states. And while theoretically it was invalidated by the 13th Amendment, it still exists in the body of the document. And one can feel fairly confident that it's still an unspoken article of faith among no small number of fucking Republicans. So that's more in Monday. And Titanic Tuesday will be here before we know it. Thanks again to everybody who keeps the program on the air. Subscriptions via PayPal and Patreon, your a la carte contributions. Thank you to Jeremy and Kevin this evening. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little ongoing conversation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, HeadOn.live, the single best place to listen to the Malloy program. Gather in the Horn chat room, if you wish, and put flint to steel and spark to tinder and get that Malloy campfire going, that Truth Seeker campfire. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. The pandemic is far from over. Florida has flung the gates of the disease wide open in hopes of spreading their bioterrorism to the states that are actually trying to get the disease under control. Stay home if you can. If you can't, please take every precaution possible. Wear your mask, wear your gloves. Again, thanks for the gloves. Wash your hands, don't touch your face. Carry some hand sanitizer everywhere you go. Maintain your social distance, not of 6 feet, but like Paul from Parts Unknown says, 10 or more. And for God's sakes, if you see some guy wearing nothing but a pair of board shorts and carrying a beer and stumbling a little bit, coming towards you saying, I didn't do nothing, I'm your friend, avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later, y'all.